Welcome to The Revenue Architects. I'm your host, Jeff Ignacio. In this podcast, we're going to bring incredible business athletes together. We'll explore how to build a go-to-market capability for businesses, no matter the size or shape. We'll remix content from a bunch of different places, bring in guests, deep dive into incredible topics. So with that in mind, I want to thank you for joining us. And now on to this episode of The Revenue Architects. Hey, Ben, appreciate you coming onto the show. Thanks for chopping it up with me on all the different Slack macro communities that are out there. Appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, happy to be here, Jeff. Thanks so much for having me. Looking forward to this.
So most of my guests so far have been in the high tech and SaaS space. So I'm really excited to bring you on because you're actually in an industry that is over 100 years old, I mean, the auto industry. And so I'm curious about you, your background, how you found your way into the auto space, and then more importantly, into like kind of the revenue operations function.
Sure. So I have quite an eclectic background, I would say, not your typical career path, you know, plan to be here, let's say, but through lots of circumstances, I got my way here. So I started in the photo department for NBC Universal, which is a department most people don't know exists unless you work there or you need something from them. And what we were doing was producing still photography for all the TV shows across NBC Universal. And that's really where I like to tell people that I got my first taste of actual project management. And that's where I learned how to set processes and work with, you know, big teams and things like that. After that, then I also was running our kind of digitalization effort. So I helped implement our DAM system there, our press release distribution system, and then really got my business chops when they asked me to take over our photo licensing division there. Then I left NBC, started my own business for a little while. And then my wife and I decided, okay, it's time to leave California, too expensive. We don't really enjoy the industries we're in right now. We want to change. We applied to jobs all across the country, ended up in Michigan. And then I started working for a startup here doing sales and then took over the marketing here as well. And then as startups go, that didn't work out for too long. And so then I went to a digital marketing agency, and then all of a sudden, this company I never heard of called Hella reached out to me and said, we have the perfect job for you. And it was a project management job in their sales excellence department. And I looked it over and I said, well, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. And my mom, who works in HR or did at the time, I sent her the job description. She said, you're not at all qualified for this. What are you talking about? But I applied and I got the job, and now I've been here for a few years, and now I'm the head of sales excellence and marketing for North and South America.
That's awesome. So it's, I have a connection to Michigan, by the way. I went to grad school at the University of Michigan for my graduate degree. And so, you know, hanging out in Detroit and Ann Arbor, I have very fond memories. There's a place that I went to, Blow's Barbecue and and Clifton Bell's. I think it's a bar that you can kind of hang out and imagine yourself back in the 40s and 50s. So taking it back. Tell me a little bit about your go-to-market motion, right? So, you know, what do you sell? Who are your buyers? And then how do you market and sell them? Just, you know, let's just do a top-down breakdown. So for those who are listening in technology, let's just paint a broader context of what do transactions look like in your space?
Sure. So very different from SaaS, although the automotive industry is making a play towards SaaS models, but we can get into that in a little bit. So presumably what we really do is we sell technology. So Hella sells lighting technology, so headlamps, rear lamps, interior, any kind of lighting that goes in the car, we sell that. We also sell tons of electronics, so battery management systems, a lot of things for electrification, sensing systems, which are radars and other types of sensors that go in your car, thermal management, a lot of this kind of technology that sometimes a general consumer doesn't know about. And we sell either directly to the OEM, which is your Ford, your GM, your Volkswagen, Nissan, Toyota, you know, kind of anybody, Teslas, you know, anyone out there. But we also sell to other suppliers just like ourselves. And that's because of the supply chain and how the supply chain works. Sometimes you have a deal with GM, but the part that you're selling ends up in a different part that a different supplier is presenting, and then you are actually now conducting business with someone else. And sometimes we have situations which are called directed buy, where GM or whoever tells us you're selling the part to them, they're selling it to us. Or sometimes we just sell parts that are components of technology to other companies that then sell to the automotive makers.
That's so interesting, because I worked at Intel and the mantra was Intel inside. You're selling an ingredient part to computer manufacturers or OEMs. We use the same language, it's probably borrowed exactly from the auto space. And you know, how do you stand out as a component or an ingredient to a product? I guess automobiles are the kind of the final end product that the consumer sees. They don't necessarily know that, you know, this lighting or these, you know, thermal regulators that you're selling are hella per se. Let's walk through that value chain then a little bit, right? So you have some, I guess, directed by is a channel sale. I guess they've kind of lumped in your products into another grouped component. What's the profile of your sellers, right? Are they selling direct, or is it kind of order parts based directly from your customers to you?
So the sellers at Hella range in many different facets, but essentially what we are doing is we're reaching out to buyers because we know that a car project is coming up at a specific OEM, and we target certain technologies that we want to have on that vehicle, hopefully. But we also have really close relationships because there's only, at a certain point, there was only so many automotive makers. Now there's more with lots of these startups coming like Rivian and, you know, Lordstown Motors and new things like that. But, you know, it used to be pretty small, but we know most of our customers really well. So we're also in constant dialogue with them about those technologies. And then they might approach us to say, hey, we think that technology could be used in this car program. Because so not only are we going directly after certain projects, but also we're having to do presentations of future technologies that we have. So then the OEMs can decide, do they want this technology, where they might see this fitting in, and they can learn about it themselves. So that's kind of how the buyer-seller positions work.
So then with your role in sales excellence, and by the way, and you used to, you know, work in consulting, we'd always use the word centers of excellence. I'm not sure if it's exactly borrowed from you know, that kind of thought leadership. What are you exactly in charge of and responsible for with that job function?
Yeah, I hate to give it away because it's such a nice secret in the company, because not everybody always knows what I do. But for you, Jeff, I'll spill the beans here.
Let's go.
So sales excellence is really the process, the tools, and the support of our sales team. So process is actually the processes of how the company runs. We are a German company. We love process, but it's also refining the processes, challenging the processes, and owning a lot of the processes and rolling them out with training and things like that. Tools would be mostly our CRM and other technologies that we use, some other AI technologies and things like that, that we use in support of our sales teams to not only make their lives hopefully easier, but also make management's lives easier by having better data transparency and data integrity across the whole value chain. Because you can imagine, you know, if you're selling a piece of software, you know, you're selling it, it's, you know, here's a piece of software, I'm done. For us, we're selling hundreds of thousands of, you know, parts, which then have a whole supply chain behind that. So our data integrity has to be really, really spot on. So that way we're not, you know, caught in a situation where we don't have enough in the supply chain to fulfill our orders, or we're not overbuying as well, and we have a bunch of scrap at the end also. And then the last part is support. So part of our team also supports the sales team, but doing some internal things that are hella internal. We also have support teams that help with collection of payments, and we work with the AR teams with that. So we try and take a lot of the kind of not fun parts of sales, and a lot of that comes into our team to help empower the sales teams to be able to do what they do best, which is sell and be with their customers and spend time and explain things and really hone in on what they're doing.
That's amazing, because if I think about you know, folks selling parts to, you know, auto distributors. Those relationships have been time tested. In fact, it's almost like the movie studio space. You know, I actually worked in the movie studios in a consulting form, building marketing software for three of the studios. And so, you know, the names of the customers, there's only four or five players on the block, right? And now you have this explosion of new startups. In fact, Tesla is the most valuable company market cap wise in the next five or six automakers combined, not to talk crazy valuations there. It's just interesting to see the evolution of the space. And with that change in the buyers, the needs are different. And now you're in a position where process, tools, and support are paramount to anyone's success. And I agree with you. If you can build tools and processes to help sellers sell, and what does that eventually mean? It's, you know, whether it's a farming type relationship or a hunting type relationship, they're actually doing the things that are needed and they're not worried about collections or how am I going to get paid this month? It just allows them to have that mind share and focus on selling. I'd love to work with, you know, hear about, you know, what do you think the space is moving towards in terms of ops, right? Like, is the term revenue operations solely in the bastion of high technology and SaaS, or is it kind of crawling and creeping its way into your own space? And what kind of impact do you think it's having?
I think that's a great question. So RevOps is mostly in SaaS right now, but SaaS is kind of leading the charge there because, you know, technology companies are a lot more agile. They're a lot more fast paced by design. You know, Hella is a 120-year-old automotive company, but we are very agile as well. Clearly we have to be to survive, you know, that long, but also the terminologies are moving, and we are learning, and we are focused on digitalization and these things that we're learning from many other companies, many other sectors. So the idea of RevOps in name, I would say, is not really making it into manufacturing yet, but the idea of RevOps, where there are teams that are focused on revenue generation and, you know, the kind of the operations behind all the revenue generation, and is for sure happening. So, you know, part of my role is also on the marketing side, and that is the traditional marketing as well, but also the operations behind that too. And my role is together. It's not like I have different bosses at the end. There, we have eventually one boss who oversees what we call central sales functions, which is essentially becomes RevOps without the customer service side.
I actually think for all the processes that we roll out in RevOps and SalesOps, a lot of it is actually borrowed from kind of the industrial sector, Lean Six Sigma, the Toyota production system, many of the things that are looking to improve yield rates on a finite set of, you know, resources or raw goods. You know, that thinking has made its way, and, you know, I almost think software feels like it's invented it, but that's not the truth, right?
Right.
It comes from the industrial space. Before, people were creating custom couture objects, and then Ford came in and just mass produced all of it, and then the industrial age before him. So just really interesting stuff. You can take that thinking into our space. So can you tell me a little bit more about, you know, enablement, right? Whether it's on the marketing side or the sales side in your space, how do sellers learn how to sell, or marketers learn how to market in the automotive space? Because in software, I can tell you, they go through like these boot camps, then they have their sales certification programs and their onboarding. What does that look like?
Yeah, so we don't necessarily have the time for that, to go through like a full boot camp where we can have somebody off the selling line for, you know, a month or, you know, whatever it is, 2 weeks, depends on the company. So we kind of live enablement through lots of different training. So the sales excellence team is responsible for setting up most of the trainings for sales. Some of it is training within your specific teams, because each customer is so different from one another as well. So what we do is we train on the Hella internal things, and especially the tools and systems that we need people to use. But then the individual teams teach on the practices that work within the customers. Because remember, if you're talking to, let's say, a Ford is still a massive organization that still has many different facets of it, but their processes are all the same inside. So you have to learn how you're even allowed to sell into Ford, and all the forms you have to fill out and the portals you have to go in and do things like that. So the enablement is kind of split between the sales team itself and teaching there, and with our team in teaching about the actual tools and the processes and about, you know, how to get things done so that way you can sell. On the marketing side, it's a lot about encouraging both the project management side, which is the engineering, and the sales teams, and we kind of bring this triangle together with us in the middle to then come up with the value chains, the USPs for our products. We kind of moderate those discussions to then bring everybody from, okay, what is the, you know, USP of this overall system to then what is the USP for this customer in this specific acquisition? And that's kind of where we become a moderator role.
And for those unfamiliar with the term USP, could you explain USP?
Unique selling point. So basically what sets us apart from the competition. So, you know, there's lots of people who make sensor X, whatever it is, but why do they care to buy it from Hella? What makes ours different? What if they buy it from us, what can we offer that is going to make, you know, that it's going to be different from our competition? And that's where you find the differentiation. Sometimes it's a technical thing. Sometimes it's a logistics point. Maybe we have a factory closer to theirs, which then lowers the cost. Maybe we can make ours a tiny bit smaller, which saves space in the car, which means a designer can make a cooler effect within the car or something like that. So always kind of searching and looking for those things.
It's interesting that differentiation is a formal process, right? Like you can't move past go and collect 200 unless you actually create these USPs. And in some places, you know, differentiation is table stakes. In other places, it's almost it's just a marketing tactic that we put in. But in reality, it is what sets you apart, particularly in spaces that tend to commoditize or features start to look and feel the same. You look at some of these, in my space, at least in software, certain industries have cropped up newer competitors. But at the end of the day, the features start to get parity, and they compete on a couple of things. Brand, they're competing on service. The features themselves and the software are actually not too difficult. Lower implementation times. So, you know, if we use that same language, it's almost universal, these practices.
Oh yeah. I mean, we really try and teach too to go benefits over features. Features are good when we get into a technical review where then the company is actually looking into every little aspect of the technology. But when we're just trying to get in front of them and tell them why it's us, we really try and push the benefits. So less the, I can measure 7 nanometers and I can, you know, sense people in this space, so that way you're selling a more, you know, safe environment for your customers and something like that.
Now we're talking about nanometers now, and you're talking about the atomics. You think about at Intel, we had these chipsets, and we kept going down 10 nanometers and 7 nanometers. I get to the point where now you're at the atomic scale to produce, and there's a physical barrier. It's going to be harder and harder with current manufacturing techniques to get to those transistor sizes. In fact, you're now looking at quantum computing as a new format or form factor of computational logic. This is super interesting. Like in my space, we're talking about software. I'm talking about the UI, page layouts, permission sets. And then I really enjoy just thinking about different industries and the language that's used. But there's themes that are universal, right? What do the buyer want? What do the buyers want? How can the sellers differentiate themselves? How can RevOps, or in your case, you know, provide, you know, sales excellence through efficiency and process tools and support? So Ben, I have this segment, and we'll see if we're going to keep it around or not, but it's called the Rorschach test. And I want you to say like the first thing that comes to your mind with any of these core topics.
Uh-oh.
So let's see how it goes. Hopefully, personalization versus relevance.
Old emails.
Training versus coaching.
Management.
Channel sales or direct sales?
Easy or hard?
Deal velocity.
Am I going to keep my job?
Conversations cash.
Making relationships.
Is door-to-door still relevant?
In a way, the door has just changed.
And is cold calling dead?
Unfortunately, no.
So, Ben, thank you for coming on. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
Yeah, I guess the easiest place to find me is on LinkedIn. You do LinkedIn, and then Ben Cohen is probably the easiest way, or Ben and Hella. Ben Cohen's a pretty popular name, so I don't want you searching for days. I'm not that important that you would spend that time either.
And any micro communities that, you know, you chop it up with fairly frequently?
Busiest one I'm in, I would say, is the Rev Genius community. You can find me in there. Always willing to, you know, share any knowledge I might have, or I definitely ask a lot of questions in there as well, and like to, you know, just learn from other people in their spaces. And, you know, I think it's just a great place to talk.
Absolutely. I'm in Rev Genius as well. So Ben, appreciate the time and we'll connect soon.
Sounds great. Thank you again, Jeff. Appreciate it.